great.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Like, as I rewatch, I mean, I like the overall idea of the story.
I just want to see what you're going to give it, because
I liked everything.
I'm not
going to
rip it.
I liked everything but the fight.
Oh, I love the gunfight. The angle.
I thought they were ridiculous.
Well, the whole thing's ridiculous.
It is. It is
terribly ridiculous.
There's lots of problems I have with this movie.
Oh, same.
So, but I haven't watched it since the theater.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was it. I saw it like the AMC Berry Road way back. When did it come out? You know,
2002.
2002. Oh,
yeah.
Shit.
Yeah. So, like, I was 22 when I saw it. I saw it in the movie theater and was like, that was a pretty fun movie.
Yeah.
It came out about the same time The Matrix came out.
2 years or 3 years after.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
But, I mean,
the story actually, we'll get into it because.
Yeah. Because we will.
Yeah.
That's what we do.
All right. Well, welcome to the Movies with Chill podcast. I'm your host, Chill. Today, we'll be reviewing Equilibrium from 2002. Equilibrium is a dystopian sci-fi action film directed and written by Kurt...
So I just don't realize I write that many notes Weimer. When I watch a movie, but I did.
Yeah. Written and directed by Kurt Weimer, starring...
Weiner?
Weimer.
I know what you said.
You said what? He did this. Then did they this did this.
That's right.
Montage. Starring Christian Bale, Emily Watson, Taye Diggs, Agnes McFadden, Sean Bean, Matthew Harbour, and William Fichtner.
Sure. Yeah, that's...
Did you say Sean Bean?
I said Sean Bean. Yeah.
I wasn't listening.
Right.
Sorry.
Okay. After enforcement officer John Preston accidentally misses a mandatory dose of emotional suppressant, he begins seeing the true nature of the totalitarian world in which humanity now lives. As always, I'm joined by David and Lee. How are you boys doing?
Oi, oi.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You guys watch anything new this week?
I watched Equilibrium.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
I watched, did I tell you I watched the new Wonka movie? I don't know if I said that
you
in a preview.
Not.
No.
Yeah. I loved
it.
I loved it.
Really?
I was going to watch it.
I've seen it like three times. I'm not going
to
lie.
Really?
Four or five movies that I have to watch. I just keep putting off.
The story is fantastic. Doesn't take itself too seriously. I was very kind of hung up on the Hugh Grant as a Oompa Loompa.
Oompa Loompa.
They did it great. It surprised the shit out of me. And he's not in it a ton, but like the music's great in it. The acting's great in it. The overall story's great. Fantasy world they live in, you know, obviously.
Right.
But it's great.
Okay. I
very highly recommend it.
I wanted to see that. I still haven't seen Oppenheimer.
That's great.
Killers of the Flower Moon.
I haven't seen that.
Or Barbie.
And I love Barbie.
I need to watch all of those.
One.
Yeah, well, I can't watch that.
Yeah,
so.
I can't watch that yet. So.
Not out yet.
So I have kind of gone down a very deep rabbit hole of the three-body problem, and I finished the audiobook today, and then I watched the show, two or three episodes of the show yesterday. It starts off as like a mystery, and then it goes hard sci-fi, and I really liked it.
I don't know
it
what
too.
You're talking about.
So it's actually a show on Netflix right now.
A lot of people talking about it.
And the premise, without like basic premise that I want you to go into, is that about all of these top scientists around the world, like specifically like physics professors and stuff like that. And we're talking like cream of the crop, are all committing suicide for whatever reason.
Okay.
And on the show, it's like a group of friends that are all kind of top scientist people. Stuff's kind of happening in their circle and like, oh shit. In the book, it is one of the top scientists is like kind of recruited by the UN to kind of infiltrate and figure out, hey, why is this happening? I haven't finished the show yet, but the books were... It was really good. I'm on the second one right now.
Nice. So. There's a Wong in that.
Yeah. Without giving too much away, three-body problem starts off as mystery... And then it gets, like, cosmic horror.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm in.
So.
It's on Netflix?
On Netflix, okay. Yeah. So, I can't attest for how the rest of the show goes. I've only seen the two episodes, but...
I'll pause Survivor to watch it.
There you go.
I'm on season 20 right now.
Oh, my goodness. Are you rewatching it? Or just... Okay.
Yeah.
hey, you know.
Nice.
I got Jalissa hooked on it.
Yeah.
She's like, you haven't started season 20 yet. And I'm like, no, not yet. And she's like, okay.
Let's do it. Which one's that one? Is that like Winners at War or something? Or no, that's not till 40.
No, it's Heroes versus Villains is season 20.
Oh, that's
20.
A fun one.
Yeah.
That's a fun
that was
one.
A good one.
Yeah. It's like top three seasons of all the Survivors.
Oh, yeah. 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 So,
hey, I also watched, it's like 7.5 minutes long, and it's called The Portrait of God. It's a short movie.
Okay.
It's on YouTube.
Yeah.
You should watch it.
Should watch it?
It's, all right. It's a really, really good short horror movie.
Really?
It's not jump scary. Mm-hmm. It's just like, yee.
Yeah.
But I loved it. I watched it yesterday. I was like, that was really good. I've thought about it like for 2 days now, like off and on. Like,
awesome.
Cool. The icebreaker question for this week is, does humanity secretly want to be controlled? It's kind of a deep one.
Man.
I think that anything that makes it easier, people go with it.
Okay.
I think the weak-minded people want to be controlled.
Yes. Okay. I agree with that. But that's what I'm saying. I mean, that goes for government, religion, all of it, right? Yeah. So
everything.
It's easier to follow something that tells you what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Than to think for yourself.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that...
The problem with thinking for yourself is you can't go back to that following crap. You just can't.
Right.
Once you start questioning the crap that's going on, you're just like, eh.
Yeah, that's bullshit. Yeah.
No, I'm not doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think overall, as a society, as a whole, the answer is yes. And that's why you go back 10,000 years to... whatever tribes, and they have something that they worship and rules that they follow. It goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
And I think that that is pretty much a definition of humanity.
Yeah.
There has to be some societal rules or
you're just going to
have chaos.
Right.
But as far as like control, like I don't think humanity wants to be told to the nth degree of what you can and cannot do.
I agree because then you just end up with the, I mean, look at, that's what Hitler tried to do.
Exactly.
And it blew up in his face. It doesn't work because you're Stalin, always going to have thinkers and people that are independent and they're going to blow it up in your face.
Exactly.
Yeah. Always. So I think it's an endless cycle. And I think that that's just the way it's always going to be.
Yep.
Unfortunately, we'll never get to Star Trek.
Nope. Yeah.
I wish that we would.
Right.
They don't work. There's no money.
There's no money. There's no. Yeah.
They work to better themselves. That's all they do. That's why they do their jobs in Star Trek.
Because they want to do it, not because they get paid so much to do it.
Right. Yeah.
So
they want their name in the book. That's what they want.
Yeah.
Yep. The science book.
Cool. All right. Well, let's talk a bit about the movie before we get into some spoilers. Equilibrium has a runtime of 107 minutes. Released December 6, 2002, and it had a budget of $20 million, and it grossed $5.3 million.
Doesn't surprise me.
Are you guys ready for the top box office for the month of December 2002?
Let's hear it.
Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers.
Hmm.
Catch Me If You Can.
Jeez.
Made in Manhattan.
Ugh.
Die Another Day.
Mm.
Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets.
Whoa.
Sheesh.
2 weeks noticed. Drumline.
Oh, Nick Cannon?
Come on. Star Trek Nemesis.
What? Tom Hardy.
Gangs of New York.
What?
Holy crap.
Some Murderer's Row.
Analyze, Gangs of New York. And 10 is Analyze That. And I want...
That's terrible.
I want you guys to guess where...
Equilibrium?
Where Equilibrium is at.
So like it's not in the top 10.
It's
so
I'm in the 30s.
17.
I'm going to say the 30s.
30s.
Like,
okay.
I don't know. 30th.
Okay. So it placed... 42 for that month, and it just lost out by like $100,000 so this is 41 was Santa versus the Snowman in 3D.
Yes. I think the problem with this movie is when it came out, it
groundbreaking.
I don't think it was terrible, like when it first came out. It just hasn't aged well.
No. Right.
But there was, I didn't even know what it was when we went to see it. There was no marketing for this movie.
Right.
I didn't even hear of this movie until I saw it like on TV somewhere.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And I thought I'd watched the whole thing. I hadn't. I'd only watched bits and pieces of it.
Right.
Because when I sat down and watched it yesterday, I was just like, wow.
Yeah.
This is bad.
Yeah.
All right. So, writer and director Kurt Weimer invented the martial arts style of gunfighting for this movie in his backyard. Despite Despite popular belief, absolutely no wires were used in the film at all. All of the gravity-defying stunts were done through conventional means. For example, the backflip off the motorcycle was done with a trampoline. During the course of the film, the violence becomes progressively more graphic. In early scenes, it's almost PG with no blood visible, despite being, you know, people being riddled with bullets. And as the movie progresses, blood starts spilling, and by the end, single bullets will spill large volumes of blood. This has the effect of increasing the emotional effect each act of violence has throughout the movie. So,
sure.
Kurt Weimer originally wanted Christian Bale for the lead role as Senator Grammaton cleric John Priest after seeing him in American Psycho, which came out in 2000. Bale was not available at the time, considered Dominic Purcell for the role. Ultimately, Bale became available, and Purcell was cast as Seamus, the resistance fighter, in the opening film.
Seamus.
Daniel Radcliffe also auditioned for the part of John Preston's son, but they didn't want Harry Potter. So
might have made him a little more money.
Right? Yeah. Well, they had Chamber of Secrets out that month as well, which I'm guessing he made a little bit more than that.
I'm not saying Daniel would have made more money. The movie would have made a little more
money. You think so?
Yeah.
Could be. Anything of note before we get into spoilers?
No.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Would you recommend people watch this movie? And if you do or do not, who do you think would enjoy it?
I got to say, I really don't hate this movie.
Okay.
I don't hate it either.
I think it just takes that special person that likes sci-fi.
Yeah, you're going to have to love dystopian future movies.
Film noir almost to it.
Right.
You're going to have to love Christian Bale a lot
because
he's literally the only bright spot of the movie.
Right.
Is Christian Bale.
I really like his son in the movie too.
Yeah, I do too.
But
his son was one of the best actors in the entire movie.
He had such a limited role.
I agree. I'm just saying,
It's not for everybody.
No. Yeah, it's a weird movie.
It's weird.
Yeah.
It's definitely weird.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, let's get into spoilers. On your count, Lee.
Yeah, good.
All right, cool. Let's get into some trivia. Number one, what is the sole purpose of the Grammaton cleric?
To find and eliminate people that feel.
Okay. Yeah. So I'll give it to you, but to seek out and eradicate the true source of man's inhumanity to man, his ability to feel.
Yeah.
Why was Equilibrium closed in that district?
Terrorist.
Mm. Yeah, that's correct. How many vials does Preston initially put behind his mirror?
Two.
Seven.
Two.
Initially.
Initially.
Yeah. And then the vial gets bigger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What color cloak do people wear prior to incineration?
Red.
Red.
Red. And finally, who is the puppy with at the end of the movie?
The girl. His daughter.
His daughter. All right. Bonus question. What book did Kurt Weimer say he drew inspiration from? I feel
1984.
Like... 1984. Yep. That's correct.
I mean, yeah. Yeah. It's a knockoff of 1984 completely.
Definitely.
So.
And a little bit of The Giver.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, let's get into our long form discussion led by David. Take it away, David.
All right. So, movie takes place after World War III, where humans have pretty much destroyed one another. Humans' volatile nature needed to be repressed. The Grammaton cleric then seek out and eradicate anyone that can feel. Basically, it starts off in a rundown.
Kind of like a raid.
Yeah, it's like a rundown house or building, and the police, I'm just going to call them the police because they never give them a name,
right?
Because they're not clerics. So the police, the feeling police,
yeah,
show up to the hideout.
The thought police.
They show up, and you can see all of the resistance people. At the time, you don't know what they are. They're just they look kind of like rebels, or they're surrounded by art. And the police go in and pretty much eradicate everyone. We get introduced to Christian Bale. His character is John Preston. And then Sean Bean's character is Aurel. And that they're partners.
Yeah.
Cleric partners.
As soon as I saw Sean Bean in this movie, I'm like, I wonder when he dies.
Yeah, when does he die?
I know that guy. I tell you what.
I think that's almost in his contract that he has to die in every movie.
I think he's actually not taking roles anymore that he does die in.
Really?
Because he wants his kids to see that he lived.
Right. So they have pretty much trapped the rest of the rebellion in this room.
Right.
And Preston, I wrote down John for the entire, just saying.
No, you're good.
So I'm just going to say John tells them, I'm going to run. I'm going to break down the door. You guys shoot out the lights.
Mm.
And so he takes off running. I do like this scene, though.
This was a cool scene. It really was, like, visually stunning. Cool.
Because the camera goes sideways, too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and he doesn't break the door down. They shoot
the hinges.
They shoot the hinges and the doorknob and stuff.
So it's timed perfectly.
Which I can't imagine training you would have to get that right.
Right.
But, yeah, he blows they blow the door, he jumps through,
and he surfs on the door.
Yeah, like slides into the room, and they shoot the lights out at the same time, so it's just pitch black.
The screen is pitch black, and you don't hear or see anything. And then you hear, where is he? Yeah. And then someone's like, shh, 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 he's coming. And the next thing you know, you just see gunfire shooting in all directions. Like, it's like to the right, to the left, to up, down, yeah,
left behind,
and
me.
It's like a split second in between shots, so you get the feeling
the muzzle flash. He's
moving,
up the room.
Yeah, he's moving his arms, his body is in one spot, which is
insane.
Well, I think like his waist, like everything from his torso down, but he's like, you know,
so. But I thought that at the end when his guns are glowing, that it was very anime.
Yeah.
The shot was. It was shooting up at him, and it's just the two ends
red
of the
hot
gun.
Barrels
and I was like, man, that was very like anime looking. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. Without emotion, he has this ability to sense where things are hidden.
Mm-hmm.
He has like a psychic ability almost, and he knows where the art is hidden, and it's below a rug.
Yeah.
And he says it's there, and they rip up the floor, and that's where we see the Mona Lisa. And a guy runs in, he's almost like a scientist, and he checks it, and he was like, it is real.
Mm-hmm.
And he orders him to burn everything. Aral had taken a book with him. John asks him, he said, you know, why'd you take that with you? And he was like, sometimes they miss things.
Yeah.
And they get in the car. At this time, you kind of realize that everything is black and white. The mm-hmm. film is not filmed in black and white.
Right.
But the cars, the buildings, the suits, everything everyone wears is black and white.
Right.
It's a very film noir feel to it. And you can tell, like, even they save money even on, like, the what is it? Not the backdrop. What's it called? The background painting that they have in film. What is that called? You know what I'm talking about? Like, they put it, like, through a building window so it looks like the city's out there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a painting.
Like a cityscape.
Like, but they call it something. Anyways, you can tell that it's all done just
Cohen when we need him.
Just a little cheaply. You know, like, it looks very almost 60s, 70s style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like it's filmed in the early 2000s.
No, it does not. When they get to the city, people are watching propaganda on how emotion has ruined everything.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of scenes of like Adolf Hitler and nukes going off. Yeah. And they all must take their medicine at the exact same time. Posium. And like the city stops when the timer goes off. And they all get their little dosage gun out and shoot their necks with it.
I don't think I could do that every day. Maybe take like a pill.
Well, you're not going to
multiple times a day.
Yeah. It is multiple times a day, but you're also not going to like have fear about doing it.
Right.
Because it stops it.
The first one. That's it.
Right. The clerics also know when someone is feeling. So if someone hasn't taken their medicine, they can sense when someone hadn't taken their medicine.
Right.
At this point in time, we're introduced to Father's voice. Chancellor DuPont, played by Angus McFadden. Yeah.
Robert the Bruce from Braveheart.
There you go.
We learned that John was a prodigal student and has been able to point out feelings almost instantly. Mm-hmm. We find out that John has two kids, a boy and a girl, and the boy being in school to also be a cleric. He's very dry, the son is. His wife was incinerated for breaking the law and feeling. Mm. DuPont wants to know,
how do you feel about that?
How he missed it if he's so great, he asks him.
Yeah.
And John doesn't know and asks himself the same question every day. With DuPont's question, he realizes that Aral was acting off in the car and goes to the evidence to find the book that he was supposed to turn in, but he had not turned anything in.
In months.
He finds out he had been going to the Nethers for weeks. John finds Aral, takes a car out, finds him, and...
Sure it's not Errol?
I think it's a Rawl. He says a Rawl several times because I questioned it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And was like, well, one, what is his name? Because it's spelled E-R-R-O-L.
Which also I wanted Rawl. To, just real quick.
It might be Errol. I don't know.
When we go back and he's like, yeah, let me check the records. They've got this big ass book.
Yeah.
Like, big ass book. And he's like, yeah, there's nothing there. I'm like, are you sure you want to check that again? Because you didn't do anything.
Right.
Dude, no, I promise.
It's today.
Yeah.
This is today's page. Nothing's come in.
Yeah.
Okay? Take your bullshit and get out of my face.
Get out of my face.
You're about to feel something.
So John heads to the nethers, and he finds him in a church.
Yeah.
It's like the ruins of a church. And he's reading a book, and he says that everything that makes us who we are is gone. But John said, there's no war, there's no murder. And Errol says, we murder. And Errol says,
it's not the same.
It's not the same, yeah. He starts reading again, reaching for his gun, and pulls the book up to his face. And as he's like reaching for his gun more, John just executes him, shoots him right in the neck, through the book.
Mm-hmm. And no blood.
Yep. And at this point in time, we're introduced to Brandt, played Taye Diggs.
Mm-hmm.
He's also a cleric, and he's pleased to be assigned with John. Says he's like John. The problem I have with Brandt in this movie...
He smiles.
So, yes. At the end of the movie, I question whether he is feeling the entire time. Yeah. Like, that's his role.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, he's a cleric that does feel, but he has emotion.
Yes.
Like, very clearly in this movie. Yeah. And they don't really hide it. And so I'm wondering if that was intentional. Mm-hmm. They don't say if it was or not, but yeah.
Or Taye Diggs is just a terrible actor.
But do you think the director, with being so intentional with certain things, that he would have been like, you can't do that?
He was showing more emotion than Sean Bean was through the entire movie. So.
Yeah.
And Sean Bean was not supposed to...
8 minutes that he was in it.
Right.
Yeah, no shit. Well, his body was in it for like another two.
Right.
John gets home, finds his son watching the propaganda on the TV, the big screen.
Mm-hmm.
His son says that he saw a kid crying at school and asks if he should be reported. And John says, absolutely. He also says, thanks, John. So there's no like fatherly, motherly.
No.
Everyone has a purpose.
Which, the problem with this movie for me is that, like you guys were saying, you're setting up this to where you're specifically looking to see if somebody's feeling one way or another about it. And then you have, you know, Taye Diggs with his character and then family. Like, it wouldn't make sense to me if you're trying to suppress people's feelings. Why have kids that you're with? Because you're not going to care about that.
For the same reason, I guess in The Giver... Yeah. Right. They're like not cloned, but they're produced and then given to a family to raise. Right. And I think that it's probably a directive of the society that they must have 1 to 2 children.
Right.
To repopulate.
Repopulate.
Okay. So they're not having.
I don't have a problem with them, you know, people reproducing. What I'm saying is that wouldn't you have all of the kids away from their families? Because if something were to happen. For example, in this movie, when the wife is killed,
we also don't know how long the society has been like this.
Right?
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It seems like it's
got to be hundreds of years.
I wouldn't say hundreds because there's just one city.
If World War III though breaks out, and destroys the bulk of the population, to get back to where you are. Ain't going to be quick.
Maybe they tried taking the kids away and maybe the kids didn't strive.
I just want to know how you are going to raise children without feeling.
Right.
You have to be able to care for the child.
I guess the whole point of the movie is that's the problem.
It doesn't work.
Right. So.
They mentioned other countries too, didn't they? Or am I mistaken?
Not really.
No.
It's very much like a fantasy world because they named the city's name. Yeah, like it's not like it's New York or
So
John goes to bed, which is interesting to me because just because you can't feel doesn't like feel like emotions doesn't mean you don't use a pillow when you go to bed.
Or you don't get cold.
Yeah, he had no sheets. He slept on a damn mattress.
Yep.
It's very strange. But when he sleeps, he remembers the scene with his wife and his wife gives him like a slight little smile and the door busts down and they take her away, accusing her of being a sense offender. She runs up, kisses John, and he has no reaction. And then you see the kids watching like down the hallway.
Why can't they like give him another chance, just put him on the sense offender list.
Make him register. You have to walk and tell everybody, I was a sense offender.
Oh, no. That's bad.
I'm not making fun of that. I just thought it was
funny. I don't care. So the next morning, John gets up and takes his morning dose out of Posium. And while he's washing his face, his elbow hits it and the dose falls and breaks. His son is directly behind him and says, what are you doing?
What are you doing?
He says, I dropped it.
Damn, you little snitch.
He says, right? He says, I never take my medicine out beforehand, but I did that time. His son very coldly says, well, you will go to equilibrium right away and log the loss and get a replacement.
Yeah,
of course.
At this point, I was like, damn. Little kids.
He's a little shit.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And okay. So
get right on it.
He gets ready and his son says, I called your partner and said he'd meet you at equilibrium to replace the dose.
Yeah.
John says that was the right thing to do. His daughter was being annoying, which is funny. I think that's funny.
Yeah.
Because right off the bat, you kind of get the feeling that the little girl is fine too, you know? And she's being annoying and the son says, you know, stop.
Stop.
She gives John the same smile his wife gave him in the dream, like a little kind of crooked smile, making John pause. When John gets to equilibrium, the site has been closed due to terrorist acts. His partner shows up and picks him up, and he says, you know, man, you got through that line quick. And he was like, yeah, they weren't too busy today.
Yeah.
They go to the house of someone sensing, and so John...
I'm sorry.
No, please.
Do you think that this is the... Like, at what point do you think John was like, yeah, I don't know if I'm all about this? Obviously, his wife had kind of an impact.
So, I think that it did, but I think killing his partner... He had like a sub that wasn't right. You know what I mean? And I think that that's what happened. He subconsciously put the medicine out, subconsciously hit it with his elbow.
Because he even says, I never take it out
before. I never do that. Right. I think it happened after he killed his partner.
Yeah.
I think something happened. Because how many times had he ever dreamt of his wife? He might not have.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that night he dreamt like, holy crap, how did I miss it? With my wife, well, in the car, he missed it. He didn't miss it with Sean.
So yeah.
He knew exactly what was going on.
Okay. To digress.
Okay.
How the hell you get married? Well, do they assign you a wife?
They probably do.
Yeah.
Because how are you going to fall in love if there's no feeling?
No. They probably assign. Like they did in The Giver. I always want to say Giver.
Yeah.
But
totally different.
This is your optimal pairing for you.
Good Lord.
Your offsprings will serve the great cause.
Right. So Brant picks him up and they go to, he says, we have a sensor. So they go to the house and John loses his cool a little bit.
Yeah.
Like he's not cool and collective like he usually is.
Right.
And he grabs a lady and slams her against the wall. Brant kind of takes pause of how John acted. Then they bust down a wall and find a room filled with illegal antiques. Woman grabs a gun to kill John, and Brant goes to shoot, only to be stopped by John. He grabs his arm, and you think for a split second that, you know.
And that was a cool shot, too, where
it was the gun camera tilts.
And the gun's initially pointed
straight,
and then it curves up to where the barrel's pointed.
Yeah, upward, the camera tilts, and you see, and pans out, and you see that John stopped Brant from shooting him.
Right.
So John is questioning Mary, played by Emily Watson.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to know who her friends are that helped her accumulate all of her collection. She asks why he's even alive if he can't feel. He pauses but says he's here to serve, and she says she's here to feel.
Yeah.
Without love, anger, sorrow, breath is just a clock ticking, which I thought was a pretty cool line.
It was cool.
Says she will be processed. She says, don't you mean executed? We learn how the next thing we see, learn how the clerics use their guns and get trained. DuPont is teaching the students how to like gunfight. It's like a 30-second scene.
Yeah.
Like he's just above them. And
it's, I'm just going to be honest. I thought it was absolutely ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
It is the whole point is we've narrowed down every style of shooting. And if you do these movements,
you can't miss. But also, you're standing in one spot. All anyone has to do is aim at that one spot.
Yeah, shoot your legs. Yeah. And they're...
I think that there were good intentions with this film.
Right.
And I think if you took the story and tweaked it quite a bit, it could be like...
Quite a bit, yeah.
You could change the fighting style where they are doing that, but they're moving. You know what I mean?
Right. So...
Like almost like a ballet, like they're
running
and doing stuff. And
early gun fu, which is John Wick, you know.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, for sure.
This movie got a lot of heat because it came out 3 years after The Matrix, and a lot of parallels, a lot of leather, a lot of dystopian action, you know, all that stuff. So I don't think that that movie...
It was trying to cash in on the Matrix.
Well, the funny thing, though, is that the script actually came out, like, was written before the Matrix, if I'm not mistaken.
So John goes home after we see the gunfight and stuff.
Right.
And he's having doubts about taking his medicine. Doesn't take it. And he wakes up in the middle of the night in a cold sweat. His heart's pounding. He starts starting to feel, basically. Mm-hmm. He sees the gun coming up through, like, the window, like, the color of it. And he starts, like, picking away at the window. As soon as he sees the sunrise for the first time, like, it just, he goes into panic mode.
Right.
He runs to take the medicine, but again stops. Propaganda is always playing through the city. While busy line to walk to work, he drops his medicine so no one can trace it back to him. Sits at his desk and realizes that all the desks are organized exactly the same way. And he starts reorganizing his desk.
Yeah.
Brant walks up and says, "What are you doing?" He says, "I'm trying to optimize."
Yeah.
Brant says that they have offenders. We get to another building. They sweep the building, killing everyone. John finds a room full of relics and touches them, feeling for the first time like he's dragging his hand and feeling like the different surfaces. And and then he puts a music on. And that's, I think, when he really feels like
breaks him down.
It breaks him down to tears.
Killed the music. Him,
And questions I had about this is, like, no one else heard that.
Right.
You know, like, right. No.
But
and no one else came down and saw him crying. Nope. Yeah. You know,
nope.
No. John also takes a book with him. And the exact same questioning between Brant and John happened.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, sometimes they forget things. And then a police officer says, hey, we found something out back. And they go back and they find a bunch of, like, dogs.
Puppies.
Oh, yeah. We learn that humans don't have pets anymore because they serve no purpose.
Yep.
If we can't feel. They exterminate all the dogs and a puppy runs to John. And he picks it up and it licks his face. He saves the puppy by saying it needs to be tested, which was, I think, the only funny scene in the entire movie is when he's holding it out and he says, we don't know what it has. We have to take it back to get it tested. You know,
it's like licking him all over the place. And what a cute damn dog, too, man.
I know,
like,
right?
Golly.
Brant is clearly onto him. Like, you can just tell he's clearly onto him.
So the puppy used in the movie was a Bernese Mountain Dog.
Uh-huh.
The noises it makes, barks, whines, yelps, etc., weren't made by the dog, but by an actor who specialized in mimicking animals.
Hell yeah.
So
Lee, you should get that job.
For sure.
No.
Look at that. Kitty cat.
Meow.
So John goes before DuPont and says, why are we killing the people instead of questioning? And DuPont says the father has declared that they no longer need to process offenders and they need to be shot on sight or incinerated. John argues that that's counter to law, but DuPont shuts it down and says father is law. Father will is all that matters. John is watching Mary through the cameras at his desk and goes to evidence and pulls her stuff up and he gets her perfume out. He finds a ribbon and is kind of feeling it. And then he finds a photo. And on the photo, it says freedom on the back. And it's a picture of Aral and her. John goes into the nether and says it's enforcement related, but Brant is waiting to follow. John shows back up to where the dogs were and lets a puppy go. But the puppy is barking outside the door and he can't leave it. So he picks it back up and puts it in the trunk with his coat. The police show up and ask why he's there. He doesn't have an ID because it's in the coat, in the trunk with the dog.
Right.
They go to open the trunk, but the main cop finally recognizes him and they stop. But the dog barks and he uses his skills to mess him up. That's what I wrote.
Yeah.
He blasts the shit out of him.
This is the pistol whip fight, right?
No.
No. No. This is where he takes two machine guns from them and
right.
He hits them and shoots them. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he jumps over, like, the motorcycle and shoots him. And,
yeah. It was pretty cool.
I do like the gun in the sleeve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I like that he can do that and it reloads for him. Like, that is badass. Cool. Yeah, I love that. Yeah.
That was probably, for me, one of the best fight scenes.
Oh, yeah. I think so, too. I think so, too. He's back at home. He pulls his mirror off the wall and finds a place to hide his medication.
Yeah.
And then he's back at work practicing his fighting skills when Brant shows up to spar with him. Brant tells him that it's his job to know. He is thinking. Brant says that they're trying to figure out who killed the police, and he has theories, but is glad it happened because now there is... Hold on. He's back at work, blah, blah, blah. They're doing the
sparring.
Yeah.
Which was fun. I mean, wooden swords. I'm always down for like a samurai kind of right. scene. So.
And so they said that they're going to escalate the extermination of the rebels, and it's going to be a massacre. Mm-hmm. They raid Sector 7, and John watches the police kill everyone. He's about to be shot, but stops it. And he's about to be shot in like the back of the head, and he stops it, and he helps the people that were going to shoot him escape. John finds multiple cops and goes to find John fights multiple cops. So this is where he is hitting them.
With the pistol.
The pistol fight.
So that was, it only took 30 minutes to film that.
It doesn't surprise me, but also they have helmets on.
Right.
Just shoot them.
Also, isn't that where, like, so the bottom of the magazine.
Like little spiky things.
Yeah. But yeah. So every magazine has like a spiky thing.
Buddy, I don't know.
So, okay.
It's a pretty
heavily modified Beretta.
Yeah.
They ain't no shit.
For your pistol.
he fights the police and kills them, and he catches up with the guys that he helped. The guy kind of looks at him like, shit.
Yeah.
And Brant is standing there with a crap ton of cops. Right. Like, it's like 20 of them. And John is calculating in his head, like, what do I need to do? And he slowly is clicking his gun to automatic, you know? And the guy looks at him and shakes his head like the rebel says, no, don't do it, you know?
And that, for me, that was one of the most tense scenes of the entire movie.
Yeah, you know I agree. What I'm
saying? So.
So John, you know, Brant says...
Lee's face is just...
I know.
Where
Brant,
are we at?
Brant says, you know, you should do it. And he says, no, you should do it. And this is...
This sounds like a great movie.
When the gun swaps.
Doesn't sound like the movie I watched at all.
He gives the gun back to him, and he walks off, and they line up to kill the guys, right? Mm-hmm. John's standing there with his eyes shut, and Brant is across from him through a glass wall where the guys are lined up, and they start shooting, and he's just watching him.
There's no such thing as it's perfect bullets all the time because they're walking by as all these bullets are whizzing by.
Yeah,
that's how it works.
Yep.
So John then goes back to DuPont and finds the underground, asked to find the underground resistance once and for all and destroy it. He is then with Aurel's body and says, oh, this is where he finds the photo, I think.
Okay.
He says he was sorry and goes through the possessions he had with him at the time of death. He finds the photo with freedom written on the back of it. Yeah, that's it. John goes to Mary and says, you knew Aurel, and she shows the picture. He admits that he killed him, and Mary attacks him.
Yeah.
John goes to the building named Freedom. Freedom something. I couldn't catch it. But it clicks. Like, that's what it is. It questions the guy / teacher / whoever he was.
Right.
And he admits to knowing him. He sees a false wall. And I love that he just throws the guy through the wall and discovers a secret passageway.
That guy is in, like, 14 different movies, but he's never, like,
plays the,
the side character. Yeah.
This is when he finds Jürgen, played by William Fitcher.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The leader of the resistance. And Jürgen says that they've been watching him and knows that he's feeling the resistance has been able to see. They have people watching throughout the city the entire time. Mm-hmm. Jürgen gives him a polygraph to make sure he is feeling and explains that for people that have freedom to feel, some of them have to not feel to protect the rest of them.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Jürgen is taking his medicine.
Yeah.
Like he doesn't feel.
Right.
But he knows what's right and wrong.
Exactly.
Right. DuPont has John picked up and questions him. DuPont says that one of the clerics is feeling and accuses John, and John says that he's been trying to get into the resistance to bring them all to justice, showing no emotion. DuPont tells him to continue. John is at home, still hiding his medication behind the cabinet, when he checks his son's applicator at night. His kid's sleeping, and he goes to pick it up, and his son coldly asks him what he's doing. He says he's making sure that he's taking his medicine and is satisfied. His son rolls over and says, good night, Dad.
Yeah.
And that's when you're like, oh, shit. Like the son's right, feeling. Right. Yeah. Which makes John pause. Talking to Mary again, and she discovers he is a dosing. She reaches out to him and they touch in front of the camera. Jürgen says that he is to kill Father, but no one has seen Father since the uprising. They need John and he agrees to do it. Jürgen says to not see Mary anymore because it will make it hard to do what he needs to do. John goes to his desk, watches his wife's incineration, which sends him over the edge. John runs to Mary's execution to stop it.
Actually, two different actresses that play Preston's wife. Commendation archive footage was filmed first, and it features Alexa Summer. However, whenever it was time to film the scene where she's arrested, she couldn't be found, and they had Maria Calzo.
That's super interesting. I mean...
And had to take her place. And as a result, there are two separate credits in the movie. Summer is credited as Vivian Preston, while Maria Calzone was credited as Preston's wife, even though they were supposed to be the same person.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
So he can't stop Mary's execution. He watch her burn up. But it's not like just a fire. Like, I'm pretty sure it's instant death. It's like a...
It's a turbine.
It's a turbine. Yeah. I mean, it just melts her, I'm sure.
Jet engine. It's just going to...
Because he says if we stop it, the whole city street will be filled with flames. So we can't stop it, you know?
Which I was really surprised by this movie because you're starting to think like, well, at least from Preston, like, this is a 2000s movie, like... Oh, she's just going to fall in love with him or whatever, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that did not happen.
That did not happen. No. So John goes outside of the...
She was on fire.
Yeah. She gone. She melted.
Yeah.
But when he makes it outside, he falls to his knees and starts crying. Mm-hmm. And that's when Brant is standing over the top of him.
You're under arrest.
Under arrest and knocks him out. So John is standing in front of DuPont at this point in time.
I don't think that guy could punch Christian Bale hard enough to knock him out because the way that the camera's set up. But anyway.
Yeah. Brant tells him to run the trace on the gun and they'll have evidence. John states that he told them he would bring the traitor in, and they tell Brant that his gun was linked to the killings. So this is stupid because he was using his own gun at the time that he killed everyone. Right. I was like, that doesn't make any sense at all.
Yep. Plot like, just one number one.
But why wouldn't they just have them trade guns at some point in time before that, like script wise.
That's what I was saying. Like, no, didn't they do that though?
They did not. That. They only did it when he hands the gun back before they execute the guys. But he had already killed the six cops with the butt of the gun.
Right. Yeah. It was crazy.
It is stupid. That part of the movie is stupid. They could have fixed that in any other way. Mm-hmm. But also, the butt of the gun says Preston on it.
Right.
And he's holding the gun. He's like, it's Preston's gun. He said, of course it's my gun. You took my guns from me. It's just stupid. I just thought it was dumb.
There's a tracker on the gun, but not the person.
Right, right. Yeah. So John tells DuPont that he only wishes an audience with Father bringing the resistance. DuPont also tells John that as a formality, they will. Having to inspect his apartment. Oh, it's going to be a formality that they have to inspect his apartment. Mm-hmm. John runs home to get rid of the medicine behind the mirror. When he gets there, his son's already found it. His son has stopped taking the medicine since their mom died.
So I'm going to be honest, of all the plot twists that they try and set up in the movie, that's the one that actually got me was the son saying,
I thought son was like, hey, I got your shit.
I got your medicine. You need to, And I'm like, oh shit, he's done. And then, I've stopped taking my medicine too. So, But it was the only plot twist that actually worked for me. The rest of them I thought were just kind of ridiculous.
No, I agree. But that one is like the best one.
For sure.
John asks him how he knew, and his son says, you forget it's my job to know when people are feeling.
For sure.
He tells his son, then, you know what I have to do, and his son smiles. John is with Jürgen and the resistance and calls in that he's found them and to come now. Jürgen is arrested, and John is dressed up to meet Father. They test John and ask what the easiest way to get a weapon away from the cleric, and Brant comes up behind his ear and says, you ask him for it.
Mm-hmm.
Father had set John up and knew John would stop the medication to infiltrate the resistance. Father reveals that DuPont has been the father the whole time because the real father has died. Yeah. So this is where I'm like, I think that Brant is feeling, and it was like part of it.
Right. Yeah.
It's the opposite of Jürgen, right? Yeah. Like, he is taking the medicine to make sure he has a level head and makes decision. And they're like, let's not give Brant this. He's already a psychopath.
For sure.
And we'll just let him do his thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
John has guns in his sleeve. He's dressed in, like, all white, like a formal thing.
And it looks cool.
Yeah. It is. But when the guns come out, he kills everyone in the room except the citizen that was giving him a test. Well, so he kills everyone in the test room.
Right.
And then he goes down, like, the long... I always think of it as... It looked like Naboo.
Yeah.
Like the hallway looked like Naboo. And I like that he throws the clips and they stand straight up.
Right.
And then there's that awesome gunfight scene. Yeah. And he's flipping and lands and puts the clips in his guns and kills everyone.
Right.
And then he gets to the door. And when he comes in, there's Father and Brant at a table with a room filled with art.
Yeah.
Also.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. And guys step behind the from the poles.
The pillars.
Mm-hmm. The pillars. And
all got swords.
They've all got swords.
Yeah.
And he fights them. And it's a pretty badass scene as well. But my favorite scene is the fight with Brant.
If you want to call it that.
Yeah, I love it, dude.
It's like quick, like three moves.
I love
slice, slice, slice.
He slices Brant. And when Brant face turns, off. His entire front face of his face just slides off. Yeah.
It was so awesome.
Yeah.
Face off.
And like, Brant was supposed to be the big baddie.
Right.
Yeah. And then DuPont ends up being a better fight than Brant.
Exactly. For sure.
Yeah.
Well, he, you know, he came up with the whole routine.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
It's his fighting stance.
It is his fighting stance.
It's his skill.
So he fights him. I like the hit away, like the gun, and they're hitting it away from each other.
That was like, so goofy.
It's defense, 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 defense.
Yeah.
Anyways,
they're like 2 feet in front, and they have to shoot in the face. They can't shoot anywhere else. Right. They have to shoot the face.
Right.
Get it out.
Anyways, he wins in his fight, and he goes and stands out of, and looks out the window, and you see all the equilibrium plants blow up, and his kids in school, and smiles, and then you see Jurgen, and that's the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the daughter with the dog.
The daughter.
Oh, with and the daughter has the dog.
Yep. Roll credits.
Roll credits.
Ooh,
yeah.
I'm telling you, in 2002, I was like, that was a pretty good movie.
That was cool.
But it's also before I even like thought about
we'll see how good it is.
What entails, because like what makes a good movie.
I'm going to play 22. A card and you're going to have to answer. So, okay.
All right. So, David, what's our rating scale for the movie?
S is superior. Okay. And that is the best of the best movies ever made in our opinion. Right now we have two on there, and that is The Exorcist and The Way, Way Back.
Mm-hmm.
A is just a fantastic movie. Could have been a picture of the year type movie.
Yeah.
It's one that you could watch again and enjoy it. All the acting, writing, everything. B is a pretty good movie. Probably watch it again.
Yeah.
C is your average movie.
Yeah.
D is close to hot garbage.
Yeah.
F is hot garbage.
100%.
Hot garbage in July.
In July. Okay.
All right. Since you picked the movie, what would you rate Equilibrium?
I'm going to go D+.
Okay.
So, I picked this movie. I hadn't seen it in 20 years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
I remember it being amazing and like one that I hadn't seen. You never see it on anything. Right, I never have owned it on DVD or Blu-ray or anything.
Now
you know why. So I bought it and watched it and laughed several times. Like, holy hell. Like, like just, I can't handle the major like plot twists that don't make any sense. It drives me bonkers.
For sure.
I thought that there were a couple cool scenes in it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I like the son. I could give a F less about Jurgen.
Yeah.
I could care less about him. I could care less about DuPont.
Right.
It should have been father. Ooh, father's dead and DuPont's really father. It should have been father.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen
Wizard of Oz?
Yeah. No. Have you seen the, what's the one with Captain America, the train?
Oh, yeah. Snowpiercer.
So Snowpiercer, it kind of has like the same.
Snowpiercer is so much better.
Oh, my God. I love it. Yeah, so I've seen Snowpiercer several times. But I was afraid they were going to get to the front of the train and like it was not going to be. But there was Mr. Right. I can't remember his name.
Uh-huh.
But it was played by Abyss.
Yeah.
Main character from Abyss.
Sam Neill?
I always think of... Yeah.
No.
You're thinking of Event Horizon.
Yeah.
Or Leviathan.
No, I'm thinking...
I only think of Lawrence Fishburne.
No, it's
The Abyss, but
have you seen The History of Violence?
Ed Harris.
Yeah, Ed Harris.
There we go.
He was in anyways.
That's for another time.
I wish that they would have gotten then father was like a real
person.
Thing, a real thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean overall, this story's stupid. There's some fun fight scenes. That's it.
Yeah.
By the time I was done watching, I could care less.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I could care less.
All right.
That's it.
Cool.
Cool. Me?
Yeah.
All right. I give it a D-.
Okay. Yeah.
It's not better than The Raid. That's it.
Yeah.
The Raid's better in all facets.
The fight scenes in The Raid are far superior.
It's an actual, I can follow that plot.
Yeah.
As limited as that plot was,
right.
I can at least follow it.
Right.
Right.
This Equilibrium is just, it is so convoluted and twisted and,
right.
and just... overcomplicated to overcomplicate
Agreed.
Things.
Yeah. I agree with that.
There's
completely.
Several shots in this movie that I'm like, what are we staring at?
Right.
We're just staring at stuff. And I'm like, what is the significance of this? Am I supposed to feel something here? Because this is just boring. Like, I had to get up several times in this movie and be like, I need to walk around.
Yeah.
This thing's making me feel dumb.
Yeah.
And the action's good. Somewhat a little oddball.
There's really only three fight scenes in the entire movie. That's and, like four, you know, if you count the brawl or the.
There's no other than John's turn from feeling from not feeling to feeling. There's no character development.
Mm-hmm.
There's no soundtrack in this movie. There's no amazing visual effects.
There was some like techno, like 90s techno, but
nothing memorable.
Right.
You know, it didn't work for me. It's not something I'm ever going to watch again.
Right.
I mean, Christian, the acting wasn't horrid, but it wasn't great. It's definitely not Christian Bale's best work.
No.
By far.
No, but not by any means.
It's like, I think he took that movie like, hey, I need another paycheck. Mm. And, ugh.
Yeah.
Not great.
I think I'm going to go with a D+, mostly just because I cared about the dog.
Right.
The plot twist with the kid was spot on.
That's another problem I had, is they killed a bunch of dogs. That's, I'm out already.
He's a nope.
I wanted to shut it off right then.
Right. Well, that's, that's emotional manipulation too, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I started off like, okay, this is that era. Mm-hmm. And then as the movie progressed, I was like, okay. And then the fights between him and the father where they're trying to shoot each other in the face, I was laughing the entire time.
Yeah, it was pretty cringy.
So there's not a whole lot for this movie.
No,
so,
I agree.
For me, D+.
Yeah. I'm so glad I didn't make Annie watch this. I would have never
heard the end of it.
No. All right.
So bad. All right.
Cool. So what do we think?
D.
I'm okay
it's
with
a nice
the D.
Solid D.
Solid
big D.
D.
Yeah.
Suggested by the big D.
Yeah.
And I don't mean Dallas.
Yeah. <Ooh. laughs>
All right.
Until well, next time.
Sounds good.
All right. Stay tuned for the post-podcast sensual message.
Oh, yeah.
You heard it here first, folks. Yeah. Let's get it on. It's Calvin's favorite Sunday afternoon thing.
Sunday morning.
Coming in.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I wanted to say thank you to all our loyal and new listeners. We invite you all to check out our Facebook group. If you're listening on YouTube, give us a like, subscribe, and follow us wherever podcasts are found. Look for our next episode, Monday, April 22nd. We hope you've enjoyed our program just as much as we did recording for you. Thank you, and stay tuned for our next episode.